I'm Earlonne Woods.
I'm Nigel Poor. We're the hosts and creators of Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast.
In this next season, we've got stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells.
About residents in a women's prison who say they want to stay there.
And the most beautiful prison garden. Earlonne, I will never forget it.
Ear Hustle. Stories about life on the inside, told by those who live it.
Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
Support for WABE's local coverage on maternal health and mortality comes from Georgia Health Initiative, whose mission is to inspire and promote collective action that advances health equity for all Georgians. Learn more at GeorgiaHealthInitiative.org.
Hard to believe, but in just about a month, Georgia Democratic voters will have a say in that still crowded presidential race. Republican voters will cast ballots too, but there's not quite as much suspense there. What we don't know is how this state's rapidly changing voter profile will affect all of this, and we will get into some of that big picture stuff. Plus, a look at the ongoing state capital budget battles and the push for affordable housing around here. It's the usual variety on The Political Breakfast. I'm Dennis O'Hare. Thanks for being with us. Theron Johnson and Brian Robinson are with us, too. Brian is a Republican strategist, communications consultant, and former deputy chief of staff for Governor Nathan Deal. Theron is a Democratic strategist, public affairs and government consultant, and former National Southern Regional Director for the Obama 2012 campaign. Hey guys, good to see you. Let's take a look at the onrushing Georgia Democratic presidential primary, but kind of a big picture thing. I mean, we've been talking a lot about candidates and what their chances are and so forth, but those candidates face a voter landscape. And Theron, I'm going to start with you. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution just analyzed voter rolls in Georgia, and it showed 322,000 new voters in the state since last year. That has made our overall voter pool younger and more diverse. A third of the voters in Georgia under 35, and that's just one finding. Just want to get some general thoughts from both of you, starting with Theron.
That's good news for Democrats. And what we've got to do is figure out how do we continue to not only have these folks feel comfortable with being a part of the issues that we choose to really focus on in our party, but we got to involve them. We got to have them at the table. And with a lot of these young voters
don't always turn out.
Well, and the young voters also, Dennis, they're less about party. They're more driven by issues like climate change. Mm-hmm. They want to basically have accessibility to entrepreneurship. They're really big in tech. And a lot of them are really, really focused on transit. And so I think that those are just three issues that I named that Democrats in Georgia and nationally have got to continue to really amplify. Last thing I'll say is that not all of these newly registered voters are going to vote Democrat. Some of them, maybe half of them, are going to vote Republican as well. But it's something that Brian has been saying, which is I do like the diversity in the makeup, and I do like the geographical makeup of these new registrants, because I think that these folks are in metro area, and we have an opportunity to really cultivate their vote.
Brian, yeah. Problem or opportunity or both for the Republicans?
It's a challenge, and it's one that's going to require a strategy. And you know what mine is. My initials are BR. Those are also the initials of broken record, because you've heard me say this before. Republicans have got to plan for the future. They've got to plan beyond the next election cycle, where they may be able to use the old coalition and scrape out a majority again. It will not be a long-term coalition.
But
we've got to change it.
They will have control. If they win, they will have control of redistricting,
which is
enormous.
Massive, and it could solidify the Republicans' hold of the General Assembly, the House and Senate, for many years into the decade, when perhaps we have lost our built-in majority with the electorate.
Right.
It could elongate Republican control. But redistricting can't stop statewide races. It won't matter in U.S. Senate races or in races for governor. And let me tell you, in Georgia, it is that race for governor that is the golden egg. It is what everybody is reaching for. We have one of the most constitutionally powerful governors in the country. And if the Democrats can get their claws into that seat, then that will give them immense power in this state. And today, we've got Governor Kemp exercising immense power in this state.
And Stacey Abrams is lurking, at least as we speak, for another run at Brian Kemp. Meanwhile, Brian...
Lurking suggests like behind the curtain. I mean, I would say she is like out in force everywhere.
But the governor has done some things like very diverse picks for state offices and so forth.
Yeah, man.
Is that enough, though?
It's part of a strategy. No, it's not going to be enough. But Theron's right. I mean, issues matter in this race for these voters. You know, the stuff that we have campaigned on, the stuff that you saw in the primary in 2018 where there was a big emphasis on gun rights, the campaigns of the future are going to look different on that issue than they do today. And I'm not saying what my personal preference is on that.
I'm pro
Second Amendment. But I think that the younger generation is less so. And so that's going to be one of those issues where you're going to see change in the coming years.
I think also the issues around housing and affordability. I mean, at a time where you look at places like Seattle, they are just booming with jobs. I mean, I think they're adding more and more jobs on Amazon. But one of the robust conversations that's going on in Seattle is how do we retain this talent and this workforce at a time where our housing market is just really exploding? And so that's why I'm so happy to see people like Mayor Bottoms, who is saying, hey, affordability, affordable housing has got to be a top priority in this region.
On that front, the Atlanta City Council passed a resolution asking the legislature to end the state's ban on rent control. There aren't any chance that the legislature does that.
Stay
Probably
tuned.
None.
Yeah, I got to be very careful on this one because the councilman who's pushing this legislation is someone who I've got to work with. But I think that the mayor's office has been...
And that councilman is?
Is Councilman Antonio Brown, newly mm-hmm. elected councilman in District 3. But, you know, Brian knows this. When you start kind of doing that in midway through the session at a time where the city of Atlanta, I'm sure, has other priorities, mm-hmm. I just don't know how that will mesh with their agenda.
But, Brian, what are the state's ideas then? Okay, you don't like rent control. You're not going to pass a bill that ends a ban on rent control. You think it's a bad idea. Okay, state, what are your ideas, Governor Kemp and friends, on the Republican side? Because affordable housing is not just an Atlanta problem.
Well, first of all, let's not assume that it's Republican policies that are driving up rent prices.
No,
than the fact that we have revved up our economy to one of the greatest in American history, and it is driving up property values, which are in turn driving up rents and driving up demand. Here's the problem with rent control. Is it disincentivizes construction of new housing because you can't maximize profits or even guarantee profits. And there are built-in costs. And people in construction, they work on big margins because they also take big risk. And they sometimes lose their shirts. Mm-hmm. And so there's got to be something that comes out in the wash. So what we'll end up having is too little supply that will further drive up demand, and it will distort the market in a very harmful way. Here's what Republicans can be for. More construction, less regulations, less governments having stringent controls over density and that type thing. Let us build. Let us get housing for these people.
Fascinating you should say that. I was talking to an elected official in one of our metro Atlanta localities, someone who I think would be a Democrat there, and he was basically saying, look, if you don't like density, you better get used to it, because with the need for transit and the need for easy access to work, density is just going to be a cost of that.
It is. And Brian did a very good job of, you know, a well-spoken pro-business Republican. I'm glad to see that guy has reemerged in this podcast. So we have a density problem. We have an infrastructure problem. And, you know, Atlanta is a city of roughly 500,000 people, but it's really just the booming, you know, outskirts, the 29 sort of MSA counties that really are going to put forth this problem. And so, look, again, I think this is an issue, and I'll just call on my Democrats and Republicans in the state. This is one issue that you can really have some true bipartisanship on, but I just don't know that based on all the stuff that's going on right now in the legislature, if this is going to be prioritized. But I do know that the mayor of Atlanta, along with a lot of philanthropic activities, with her quest to try to get $1 billion in public and private money towards affordability and affordable housing, this is a conversation that is going on multiple levels at the city.
Let's come back quickly to the Democratic presidential primary. Brian, we have seen stories about Republicans in South Carolina planning to vote in big numbers in the Democratic primary for Bernie Sanders on the theory that that will bolster the man they think would be the easiest Democrat for President Trump to beat in November. Now, Georgia is also a state where voters can cast ballots in whatever primary they want. Anything like that going on here?
We'll see where their primary is by the time it gets to here. Look, the whole crossover voting thing is something that's oft discussed and rarely delivered upon because many Republicans just can't fathom the thought of going and asking for a Democratic ballot or bother to show up to vote for a field of people that they don't like. I would also say be careful what you wish for. There was many Democrats in 2016 who thought that the Republicans were making a fatal error in nominating Donald Trump. The Democrats didn't want him to be president, but they thought he was going to be the easiest to tick off. And now he's president of the United States. So we run the risk of having Bernie Sanders as president of the United States if we do this. Let's consider that. But look, adding a little chaos to the Democrats, if Republicans can pull it off, I'm all for it. If there's a strategy that can be accomplished, sure, do
well,
it.
There's plenty of chaos in both parties right now.
It is. And I think, to Brian's point, it's highly unlikely that you'll see a tremendous impact from it. When you have crossover votes, I mean, you may remember this, Dennis, mm-hmm. when we had the congressional race in DeKalb County where Denise Majette was running against then-incumbent Cynthia McKinney, not only did she cultivate the Jewish votes.
Yeah, and this was in a Democratic primary.
Democratic district. But you had some people in North DeKalb that kind of were, you know, Republican voters who kind of crossed over into
it. I remember.
So it has effects more on local races, but I don't think that it will have an effect on a presidential primary.
And this is happening as the state is trying to get those new voting machines out, the big counties especially, trying to avoid problems and long lines. Just recently, federal judge Amy Totenberg dismissed a lawsuit from a voting rights group which had gone after Fulton, DeKalb, Cobb, and Gwinnett for long lines back in 2018. But the judge also issued a warning, Brian. You know, this has got to change. Otherwise, there may be grounds for a lawsuit in the future.
I think Republicans in the General Assembly and Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger are taking proactive steps. We saw some voting reforms implemented in the last General Assembly session that are now law. And many of them were reforms that Democrats wanted to see. The Republicans went through the process. They listened and came to some agreements that moved the ball forward on those issues. Nobody wants long lines. Nobody wants voter suppression. I think I've said it to I'm blue in the face. Everybody who's legal and entitled to vote should be allowed to vote and have access to the ballot box. Now, I am always dubious of federal judges weighing in too much on how we vote here because they...
But voting is a right under the federal Constitution. So there is some jurisdiction if you can prove a big enough problem, right?
Where does the Constitution draw the line on how long a line to vote should be? I don't think that's in there anywhere. And look, we've got weeks of early voting that are available. We have absentee ballots by mail available. The idea that a long line on one day shows a systemic suppression of votes is absurd.
But here's the problem. And Brian's heard me say this. Republicans in Georgia missed a moment which they could have really dealt with some of the issues around voter irregularities, long lines, and yes, the perception of voter suppression. You had the Secretary of State in Georgia do something that's never been done before in our history, and that is he released the names of people who were being purged from the voter file. Okay, he released the names ahead of time, encouraged people to go to the website. I heard zero from the Republicans as far as saying, look, everyone, not just don't use it as a partisan issue. In the full effort of transparency with this new Republican leadership, we want to take this advantage of this. Secondly, we're spending $100 million plus on new voting machines that have shown some challenges. And the one thing I do want to compliment the Secretary of State on is that he is working with these county voter election offices and some, you know, cities, but most of the counties, and testing the voting machine, giving the public an opportunity to get a look and feel and be comfortable with this voting machine.
And in the Atlanta area, he's working with the King Center.
Exactly.
And
he's working with different organizations. But here lies the challenge with the long lines. The Secretary of State needs to spend more time with these county offices and really show it to the public that we're going to figure out how do we reduce the lines 10%, 20%. These are some of the challenges that I've heard. You know, should we look at maybe extending the early vote locations? Should we have more precinct workers? You know, should we have, you know, a different way of how people line up? Those things are just not being displayed. And that's the best way that you deal with some of the perception of the attempts through laws and through things that we don't necessarily hear about to suppress the vote.
And Brian, on that point, and we have to be real quick here, Our colleague Rose Scott recently had the Fulton County Elections Director on Closer Look, and they were talking about, you know, will the county have to go out and buy new voter machines to deal with some of the anticipated volume of voters, because the state only is able to help so much. But if you don't, to Theron's point, extend voting hours, early voting hours, if the state somehow gets involved in saying you can't do that, does that create a problem?
Well, you can't have jurisdictions having different voting times, because that creates an unequal access to the polls for different Georgians. So I don't know that I have an answer for that. But
you're saying, look, we've got early voting hours. If the state says, you know, we can't impose more early voting hours, doesn't that go against one of the solutions that you're talking about?
I still think there's enough access for early voting to get it done. Look, if we need more machines, let's get more machines. That's a big investment, but it's an important investment, and it's one worth making. And Theron and I actually did an event with that Fulton County elections guy a couple of years ago, and I was actually very impressed with him. I mean, because he was no ideologue. He was very pragmatic and very practical. And I came away with a pretty strong faith in the system there, because this guy seemed to know what he was talking about. So I think that he'll find a solution to make sure you don't have a catastrophe on election day.
I just think you need more coordination that's visible to the public to show that the Secretary of State's office and the county elect officials, particularly Fulton County, are going above and beyond to collectively solve some of the problems we have at the voting box.
Well, I'm all for that. That's fine.
Okay.
A lot of that comes down to money, though, and that is the big subject under the Gold Dome, and we will get to that and more when the Political Breakfast continues. Stay right here.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Local, state, national politics. WABE and NPR have the coverage you need. I'm Jim Burris, host of WABE's All Things Considered. Whether it's on the air at 90.1, streaming online, or connecting through our mobile app, WABE keeps you on top of election 2024 in what's sure to be a pivotal year in politics. And for candidates and ballot information, visit our election hub at wabe.org/election2024.
And we are back with the Political Breakfast. Thanks very much for keeping us company. I'm Dennis O'Hare with Democratic strategist Theron Johnson, Republican strategist Brian Robinson. Gentlemen, the legislature is back in what you might call regular session now after taking a break to think about Governor Kemp's proposed budget cuts. But even before we get to that, there's the chance that the state could have even less money to spend if lawmakers pass the next phase of tax cuts. A new analysis from the Georgia Budget and Policy Institute puts the estimated loss of revenue, if that passes, at $615 million. That's even higher than before, Brian.
Gulp. That's what I have to say about that. Look, in 2018, when this passed, I'd gone into Governor Deal's office. I was a former staffer by then for several years. And I asked Governor Deal about the quarter-point tax cut. And I said, I'm surprised that you're for this. I mean, you're an old-style fiscal conservative, the guy that believes in balanced budgets and paying for your priorities, not a slash taxes conservative. And he goes, no, the economists show me that all this money is going to come in, we'll have a windfall, and this will keep revenues level while putting money in taxpayers' pockets. Well, the research shown to him, the prognostication of the time, proved wrong. And we actually have taken a major hit to the state budget, and that is what's causing all this consternation.
Despite a growing economy, which is what a lot of folks just can't understand.
And we have had sales tax increases because of that strong economy. But, of course, that's not going to make up the difference of the loss of the income tax, which is the heart and soul of Georgia's revenue system. It is the foundation. Everything else is sort of on top of the income tax. So if you think that this year's discussions about trimming 4-6% from state agencies, from the 25% of spending that's eligible to be cut, just imagine what it's going to be if we were to cut another $600 million out of it.
So do Republicans in the legislature who have promised more tax relief to particularly their voters have to say, you know, we got to put a pause on this?
Governor Kemp has, I don't know that he's spoken out too much about this, but it seems pretty clear he doesn't think that that's a priority, that that's a good use of our resources. So he'll have a very important voice as somebody who can sign or veto the budget. But I think it's going to be a leverage point with the General Assembly in these negotiations. There's a lot of gamesmanship going on between the governor and the General Assembly. So,
and Speaker Ralston.
Yeah, certainly as a leader of the General Assembly, certainly he's a major player in all of that. I don't think at the end of the day we do the other quarter point. And let's remember, in 2018, we did cut taxes for the first time since it was imposed in the 1930s, and nobody campaigned on it.
Theron, isn't it also true, though, despite all we've heard about the budget cuts, that agencies can find ways to cut some line items, at least, without affecting direct services? Now, these may not be the classic, you know, wasteful spending, government fat, but they're things that can be adjusted and folks can get by.
Yeah, and you had the Office of Planning and Budget, Kelly Farr, come out and say that these recommended cuts were not done haphazardly. And so that was sort of a signal to me, Dennis, and what I've been sort of feeling and seeing down at the Gold Dome is that the decision by Speaker David Ralston to sort of take a break and say, hey, let's just really focus on the budget was well received. And I think people now are going to probably find out that was the best thing to do. And so what you're seeing now is that you're seeing a level of some cooperation from the budget, you know, leaders in their conversation, some of the people who are leading these departments to say, okay, you know what, we'll take a third or fourth look to see if there's some things that we can trim. And so the one thing that I'm happy about as a Georgia taxpayer is that now there's a level of commitment by both parties and the executive branch to try to find some viable, not just short-term solutions, but long-term forecasting solutions to really figure out that we can not only manage the mid-year budget, but we can also manage the big-year budget, if we'd like to refer to it, down at the Capitol.
Do you agree with Brian, though, that the tax cut is, far from being a certainty, a leveraging point at best and maybe not going to happen at all?
I agree with that. I think that it's definitely on the table for discussion. And I do think that you've seen that the speaker has sort of spoke out in favor of the tax cut. But I do think that the numbers that you shared and what Brian just shared, I think a lot of people are concerned. So this is what I would just say, because I know a lot of the people in the executive branch is listening to this podcast. Again, I go back to, they're all at the table now. I think we've gotten past the sort of swipes publicly that have been going on and who's more conservative than the other. They're at the table. I think Democrats have an opportunity to negotiate. So
they'll have leverage to do it?
And I think they definitely got leverage because, as Brian has said and I've said, the Democrats have learned how to be a minority party. And so they've inserted themselves in this discussion.
But, Brian, pick a program that is already stressed: senior care, environmental protection, the GBI. You mentioned last time the accountability courts and public defender programs. I mean, it's not going to be magically okay, even with adjustments internally, right?
You know, one issue that you're going to see around for the General Assembly is many of them care deeply about some of these programs. They've been involved in them for many years, or they're important to their communities back home. They're particularly worried about the ability to process crime scenes, the GBI, the shortage of social workers at DFACS that help kids in need. Those are all important and are going to be lightning rod issues for the General Assembly. Sort of the struggle for Governor Kemp is that as he's asking for budget cuts, he's also pushing certain spending increases. He wants a raise for teachers, mm-hmm. which would be politically popular. Also wants more investment in the attacks or the approach to gang violence in the state. So he's got some spending priorities that will become negotiating points for the General Assembly as they're fighting for what they want.
And reforms to the foster care program, which he's just rolling out. Some of those things don't involve money, but some of them will.
And let me say, I so appreciate what he's trying to do on that and the leadership that Speaker Ralston and Lieutenant Governor Duncan and specifically House Member Burt Reeves from Marietta, who has devoted countless hours to making sure that our state's most vulnerable kids have access to a loving home. We've made so much progress. Governor Kemp is building on the progress that Governor Deal laid the foundation for. And I love the messaging that Kemp had about if we're going to be pro-life before they're born, we need to be pro-life after they're born. I love it.
The other thing that's also yes. being mentioned is maternal mortality. Georgia
and
is...
We've talked about that before on this
and
podcast.
And so really quickly, I also want to put this at the forefront. For all the legislators and their staff who listen to us, there's a study committee. I think there's a subcommittee. There's a lot of things moving through the legislature. You know, Democrats are calling for, you know, a lot of different things. Of course, total expansion of Medicaid. But when I've learned some of the statistics, particularly women of color in the urban and rural areas who die at a very alarming rate, maternal mortality has got to be an issue that Democrats and Republicans put on the top of their list of got to deal with this session.
And we will be following all of that. And of course, you can catch the latest on what's going on under the Gold Dome every Monday on our new Political Breakfast pop-up podcast, or not so new anymore, Gold Dome Scramble. Our morning edition host, Lisa Raham, and the WABE reporters catch you up on what is going on. And then Theron and Brian and I on the Political Breakfast will get you into the why and the how. Very quickly, as we wrap up, been meaning to talk about some of this on the podcast, and we've been short of time, but I can't let any more time go by without acknowledging some milestones, some passing of some legendary leaders and the retirement of one. Ann Cox Chambers, of course, one of the people behind the Cox Media Group and a force in media and politics for many years, passed away. Also, Betty Siegel, who brought Kennesaw State University pretty much from nothing into the prominence that it has now with help from some of her successors. And then the retirement of former Atlanta Mayor Sam Massell at the Buckhead Coalition. Could be argued he had more influence there than he did as mayor, although he did quite a bit in his one term as mayor.
Yeah, I'll definitely start. Former Mayor Sam Massell has done an outstanding job to improve the livable experience in Buckhead. I mean, he has been a former mayor who a lot of folks go to for leadership and advice. And then Ann Cox Chambers, I mean, it's just a giant. At the age of 100, I was told by many friends, was still very concerned about our economy and very concerned about social change in this country. Love the actual newspaper, so I encourage the AJC, do not go away from the paper news they distribute here.
Yeah, I subscribe to the Tree Killer edition, and proudly so.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, this what Cox Media Group and all the different entities within Cox continue to do for our community was just so amazing. So definitely she's going to be missed.
My first job out of the University of Georgia was at the AJC, so even though we never met, she was the first paycheck signer for me as a young adult, and she has had an unremovable fingerprint placed onto Metro Atlanta through her philanthropy and her public service. She has got a great legacy here in this city.
And when you look at the legacy of Betty Siegel at Kennesaw State, just the expansion of that and all of the young people and not-so-young people to get an education at Kennesaw State, that would never have happened without Betty Siegel.
It's gone from a backwater to a huge institution that is a major educator in this region.
And I'll take a point of personal privilege as we wrap up and note the passing of a longtime friend, full disclosure, and former boss Wade Medlock, Georgia newsman of the first rank and someone who in radio in the days when women didn't have as many opportunities opened a lot of doors for people of talent, and it is because of him that a lot of us are where we are. Wade Medlock, we'll miss you. And that's it for this edition of The Political Breakfast. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Dennis O'Hare with Democratic strategist Theron Johnson, Republican strategist Brian Robinson. Brian Robinson is a Republican strategist, former deputy chief of staff for Governor Nathan Deal, communications consultant here in Atlanta. Democratic strategist Theron Johnson is a policy and government consultant, and he is a former National Southern Regional Director for the Obama 2012 campaign. Gentlemen, thank you so much.
Have a great weekend.
Thank you, Dennis.
And you can follow us on Twitter. Brian is at Lord Tinsdale. Theron is at Theron Johnson. I'm at DENISOHAYER. And don't forget, come right back on Monday and join Lisa Raham and the WABE reporters for our political breakfast pop-up podcast. It's called The Gold Dome Scramble. It launches every Monday during the legislative session. It'll catch you up on what's happening. And then Theron, Brian, and I on the political breakfast dig into the why and how of it all. And if you like this show, please subscribe. You can do that wherever you get your podcasts. And be sure to rate us. That is, of course, a great way to make sure other people can find us. We got room for them. And we will be back in your feed and in your head next week with more nourishing political conversation. Be sure to join us.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
The Gold Dome Scramble podcast is now plugged in, a WABE politics podcast. New name, same in-depth, on-the-ground reporting from us, WABE politics reporters Sam Greenglass and Raul Bally. We'll cover local, state, and national politics as we go beyond the headlines with journalists, voters, and politicians. New episodes drop Fridays starting April 26th. Listen and subscribe at WABE.org or your favorite podcast platform.